Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Julie Bates with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 312. Today's episode is a result of probably about 40 or 50 questions I've gotten this year in little bits and pieces. And it's hard for me to kind of a person. I don't have always an answer. Sometimes I don't have an answer at all because I don't understand the problem enough. So this one's going to be to everybody that's asked me about some specific issue that they have. I would like to do the best I could to teach people, or at least help people, break down a dog training problem, to break it down so that you can understand it first. And then how do you go about solving these things on a permanent basis, not a Band-Aid thing to get through the weekend, which is what a lot of us do, I know. So, and I'm going to start with using you as an example. I think when people train dogs, or I have observed often when people train dogs, that they train on a case-by-case basis. Okay, today we're at water. I have this problem in the water. We're gonna work on this or that, they're just kind of thinking very, very, in little pieces. Oh yeah, last time when we did water, he ran around coming back, so I'm going to set up, whatever it is. So they have these kind of issues. If I were training you to become hopefully an Olympic tennis player. Now, I played tennis, but I'm like a nothing in tennis. So there's no expertise on my part here. I'm just trying to use that as an example. So you want to go to the Olympics in tennis and I'm an expert tennis coach, and you come to me and say, all right, how can I get where I can qualify for the Olympic team? And what people expect is, well, here's a list. Okay, start with this, do this for 6 months, every morning at 6 a.m., then do this kind of something else over here, do your weight training. I assume they do strength stuff there too. And so I give you a big list of stuff to do. And there you go. So you go do it. Only you are the kind of person that needs to have somebody kind of watching over you. You need that feeling of comfort. You can't just go out and do the stuff that you were told. You need somebody there to kind of help you out a little bit, kind of watch. That's an important part of you, right? But I don't do that because I'm busy, but I try. Then I get someone else to do it because they're not as busy as I am, to go watch you when you're doing certain things that I want. And then one day you sprain your ankle because you had too much coffee and you were, just playing too fast and jittery, and you sprained your ankle. Well, now you can't play at all and do the drills and all this stuff. So now you're upset, right? So now we got a psychological component that's in here, and you're upset, and you need to not be upset so that you can heal faster and maybe do some recovery type things to help you out but no one's there to tell you that, so you kind of got to get through this on your own. So we are bumping through this preparation for getting qualifying for the Olympic team because you are a whole person, right? You have your physical aspect, your mental aspect, your emotional aspect, your psychological aspect. You have the things going on in your life, all of which contribute to your ability to train to the level that you want to be. Now, everybody understands that. That's why the professional teams, the professional football teams and basketball and baseball and soccer and all of them, they always have psychologists and they have doctors and they have coaches for just everything, right? They do everything they can because they know all of the elements that go into the training of this athlete. And though they are not human, our dogs are the same way. And so I'm not saying you need to have a doggy psychologist and a vet and a this and a that all the way. What I'm talking about is it's very helpful if when you have this athlete and creature that has physical aspects to it, psychological, emotional, right, mental. It has all these aspects to it. If you understand that all of these things come into play, not just the, I got a dog, let's go run water balloons. There's a lot more to this. If you want to be as successful as you can, and if you want to understand when problems come up, what you can do about them. Okay, so when you as the tennis player sprained your ankle and couldn't train, at least up on your feet, there's a lot of other things that you could be doing, I'm sure. But nobody was there. I mean, nobody addressed that. So then you became kind of, well, you got in a real funk. And you were questioning whether you should even do this. You were questioning how much you enjoyed it. I mean, this is a pain in the neck. I'm always, so if no one, if that happened and you just got into a funk and you couldn't get yourself out, right, then this might never go the way you want. So I'm not directly relating funks, but dogs have those too. That when you diagnose problems, when you start to look at some behavior or something, not even if you have a problem behavior or you just have a goal and don't know how to go about it, then things can be difficult. Now, I know there didn't used to be any. Now there's a whole bunch of dog podcasts out there. And that's awesome, you know, because this is a great way to get good information. And what most of these podcasts are the how-tos. Everybody wants to hear what someone who's very good with dogs, how do they do this, how do they do that, like my thing. Everybody has, you give people drills, they are just so happy. Good, I got all these drills to do. I get that question all the time. So what drills should I be working on? And, you know, it's not like there is an answer. I can't possibly answer that. What if I watch you with your dog? I can tell you where stuff is. So let's break this down. And I'm going to start with an example. And one of my, I know, person who listens to all of these things is going to know that I'm talking about them. But I had somebody ask me a question recently. Now we're talking actually about a pointing lab. We're getting ready for, you know, we got all the tests coming up now. We've already had our first one this coming weekend. We got them on the East Coast and here, and they're starting all over. So everybody's getting, I mean, people are ready to do this. And he's got a dog that he's planning on running at the upper level. But it's very young and just very new to all this stuff, you know. So that's always scary when you don't know exactly what they're going to do until game day. So he was describing a problem that he had with the dog in the upland field. It's a very good dog. Seen it a lot. A very good dog. And there was a behavior on a bird, I believe. Behavior on a bird that was somewhat uncharacteristic. And he goes, I think maybe I should go do this and this and this. So my question to him was, what did she do on the land series? What was her behavior running the landmarks and blinds and stuff? And so he described that. And then I said, and in the water? Describe what she did over there. So when I heard her behavior all throughout all three series that we got done on the weekend training, or he got done, he described a behavior, and I don't, that she was being very independent. She was doing things a little bit, she was way too wired up and amped, right? And so she was not thinking as much as she can. And so she was just making a lot of choices on her own, doing kind of more what she wanted than what she had been consistently taught to do in all three series. So was the problem really what she did on that one bird in the upland field, or was the problem a little more systemic? So when you break things like that down, you can't just take one isolated thing. Well, maybe sometimes you can, but most of the time, when you have one place where you go, look at this dog is, you know, breaking on the honor, the dog's breaking on the line, the dog is, you know, doing whatever it is that you're doing, take a step back and see, look, what else has the dog done? And you can't get down in the minutia of this, into the details. You want to take a step back and go, all right, she did this in the upland field, did this on the land series, did This in the Water series, and instead of going, you know, back into the gun, I mean, in terms of what you've been working on, what you've been trying to teach, which hopefully that's all training should be, what did this dog do that was a little bit counter to that? So what this dog had done was be way too wired up and crazy. Of course, it was bitter weather and high wind and cold and snow. And, you know, the pictures are on the Facebook. We had a subarctic training day. And I'm sure for some dogs, you know, they're really invigorated by that or made crazy by it. Wind makes dogs crazy. There's a lot of things that do that. Got to notice that stuff too, folks. You can't just, boy, it's windy today. Look at my dog's nuts. What's happening? Well, that's not uncommon. And if you pay attention, you can begin to pick up on that as when you train in windy days, you notice your dog's always a little crazier and runs a little bit wild because that's often what they do. So we backtracked on this, that the dog was one, way invigorated, way wild. She'd seen her owners that day, and that is a contributor to that right there. Matter of fact, I think they even, you know, engaged with her before he went and trained her. So, so apparently that's a factor. And then so much what she did, and since it was a very similar thing she did all day long, you might not want to go after that upland bird behavior specifically, because now you might or might not, you don't know, you might create a problem now that she's been so good on birds. Now maybe we're going to have a little bit of a problem because we kind of went after this one behavior when it wasn't really the root problem. The root problem that the dog was all wired up and crazy and not thinking very well, and so not making the best choices. What created, what brought about that kind of behavior? How can we keep that from happening again and address it that way? I really think people often create problems that they didn't have to create by responding to really what's a systemic problem by just going after it in one spot and just hammering on that one spot, which puts the whole thing out of balance, because now all of a sudden that becomes the big issue and you haven't addressed the problem like this one, that the dog just highly invigorated and to a point that the thinking kind of went away. And dogs need to think when they play the dog games that we do with them. They need to think. And they do think. And they do feel. And they do have emotions about it. And so what we need to do is optimize their understanding of doing the right thing, their practice of doing the right thing. And when things change, instead of going, oh, I got to get right on this one thing, take a step back and look at the bigger picture. Give you another example. Somebody was telling me they're running AKC Master Hunters and have failed all of them. Really good dog. Not because the dog can't mark or handle, because it can, but because this is one that breaks on the honor, breaks on the flyer, and so he's always just going after the breaking thing. And then recently it was another one where the dog went back to an old fall, and he was, since she never does that, he didn't have his whistle there. And so before he could handle the situation and get her out of there, before she got in there, she was back in the old fall. So she was done on that. And then, what I hear is she's never done that before. She's never done that before. So again, same thing. So let me see. She knows what you want. Let me tell one more thing on this. So then he's telling me it was a triple and the flyer, long flyer up the middle. And she looked at that one, and because he always lets her go, which she gets to pick. She gets the last bird down generally, but she gets to pick her birds, which one she picks up. And I know a lot of people do that. I do not, but a lot of people do that. So he said, well, she'd gotten the two shorter ones, and now we're going to get the long flyer up the middle. And then, whoop, she goes over to this other one. So it was like, okay, let's just talk about this now. So you have problems with this dog who knows that she's This is also a Triple Crown level dog. So steadiness is a thing that she knows and understands and has to do in the upland field, which is more challenging than a long flyer up the middle. But here we go. So it's like, all right, she breaks on the last honor of the third series. You know, he's going to get through this Master Hunter. Breaks on that. Oh, you know, that's terrible. Look at what she did. And then other times she's broken on the flyer. And now this time he went out because she went and wanted to go get another short bird instead of the long bird. So can you hear what we have right here? He lets her pick whatever bird she wants. And again, I know people do that and say, it works for me, it's fine. So keep doing that. I will never do it. And the reason I won't do it is I have a way that we pick up stuff because I do not give that choice to the dog. And when you give your dog a lot of choices, that means they have choices they get to make. And sometimes they pick those in places that we don't want them. And so when she's never done that before, oh yeah, she chooses a lot. She always chooses her own bird. She just chose to check back where she'd already gotten one. And it's like, okay, that's not going to work. You're going to continue to have this dog making choices as long as you let her make choices. They don't differentiate. If she gets to pick whatever, you know, any order she wants to pick up birds, then she gets to pick up any bird that she wants. And she may want one before that other dog gets it because it's a flyer and it's just too tempting. It makes it a lot easier to not have breaking dog and also to not have dogs going, you know, I think I'll go over here when you want them to go somewhere else. So whether, I don't know if he really bought all that because she's just happy with all this stuff, but a matter of fact, he did try to handle her out. I'll even say this. He did try to handle her out, and she wouldn't handle. And I said, well, have you taught her to handle on marks? And he goes, I don't have to. She's a really good marker. You know, that's awesome. We all want that. But for times like this, when you're handling on a mark, you need to be able to handle them on a mark. And if they have never been handled on a mark, then they don't recognize that. They're out on a mark. They're not running a blind. So your whistle doesn't mean anything if you haven't taught them that. And people sometimes don't think of that. So if you're going to, I don't care if you have the best marking dog in the world. For me, that was Bored Out Ford. I'll tell you, that dog, he was amazing. But he still had to learn how to handle on a mark. And so dogs should not, if you're going to compete and you let them make all of their own choices, and then you get upset because they're making all of their own choices, and then you go after one of those. You go after the, you know, well, this dog breaks on a flyer, so now we're going to shoot 87 flyers and do whatever it is people do. But if you don't change that choice making everywhere else, you're going to still have the choice making problem. Now, that's kind of just how you teach the dog and evaluate when they do things, looking at it a little bit more globally. But there's also, believe it or not, you know, there is very much an emotional, intellectual aspect to this. So, for example, you're going to go run master level, finish level of whatever it is, the highest level. You're going to go do this stuff. And so, how do you do that? Let's set up, you know, I want to go run qualifyings. I want to go run, you know, I want to go to the Master National. So, did you see the blind they had in that last thing? It was in the, you know, this really technical, all kinds of stuff to it. I'm not going to go into what, there's so many ways you can make blinds difficult. So we need to start training on that. And I'm going to, you know, I'm going to say not, probably not. Probably not very much. Because let's talk about the psychological impact of this. And I've brought this up in a lot of these podcasts. If your dog, you run really hard stuff because that's what you're going to go run in the test. So you have these tight things, these close things, these highly technical things. Your dog is going to not do them perfectly. especially when you first start, correct? And if it's a dog, it will always, at some point, not do it perfectly. And so you get the corrections in, right? You're going to get the corrections, and you're going to teach them to run these really difficult blinds or these really tight marks by having them run really difficult blinds and really tight marks. So the psychology often, not always, often of this dog is they're looking out going, oh, boy. Gosh, I hope I live through this. So they have often, or they just look out and go, oh, I don't want to do this, or whatever it is they have. You can just see the way they're standing there like, oh, God, here we go. All right, now you're going to, they're just hoping to get through this with as little trouble as possible. When any thing, learning stuff and practicing stuff, hopes they just live through this, what do you think their learning factor is on that? Actually, they're learning more how to survive this stuff with you than they are about what it is out there, the 15 concepts you got going and this set of blinds that you're running. The learning thing is not there. Now, in my opinion, right, just my opinion, I think, I know I do, people learn, dogs learn, when you teach them from basic principles, and you always rely on those basic principles. So if you're going to go, you want to go run the Master National and do all this hard stuff, you must create a creature that is open and willing and trusting in you that they can do this. And when they believe they can, then usually they can. Now, on any given day, you can have a blow up, stuff just doesn't work. But if you have the dog that walks up there, sits down and goes, running a blind, okay, here we go. And they're not scared to death. They're not hoping to survive. They're not have this memories of how unpleasant this generally is. Instead, they're looking out going, all right, what are we doing? You're going to be far more successful with that dog. That's the dog psychology. So when you set up training scenarios and things with your dog at whatever level, beginning, middle, superstar, whatever it is, that mentality is going to be one of your most important tools. Now, I have personally seen a lot of people who don't care about that, don't think about that, and they're just going, this sucker's going to do this. Now, I haven't seen that be ultimately successful. You can power slam a dog through this stuff, but how do you think they're going to feel the next time you get up to run them on something? You know, I'm sure there's a few that have prevailed and done well in that because they're like their trainer. They're just a hard headed and by golly, I'm fine with this. You can do whatever you want. But for most of us with our dogs, especially now, dogs are bred way better than they used to be. They're talented, they're smart, they learn more easily, they're nice to have around. You know, so those are the kind of dogs that you want to believe in. You want them to believe in what you're asking. You want them to trust you. They want you to understand. You want them to understand what they're doing and feel like they can do it. And the way that they do that isn't by running 57 killer hard blinds. It's by running 100 blinds with certain elements to them that the dog can learn and continue and not be concerned about because they understand it so clearly. And then you can begin to add a few of those on there. But you do not have to go run killer high-level blinds all the time to have your dog run a killer high-level blind in a competition. You do not have to run super tight, extraordinarily difficult marks in training all the time to be able to go have your dog do that in a competition. What you do need is a dog that looks out and just focuses on the marks and isn't terrified of what might happen if this goes wrong. So, and also, while you're doing this, they also are responding to you and listening to you and taking directions from you and not deciding for themselves what it is they're going to do. So when you add those things together, you can often be far more successful than you would be if you are out, as I've always said in other things, taking algebra tests every day to make sure you can pass the algebra class. Okay? Nobody does that. Nobody learns difficult things by just practicing difficult things. They learn it by building incredibly strong basics. If you do that in algebra, you learn all the basics. There's rules, there's all the stuff, properties, all these things. When you know that, they can throw anything at you because you just apply those fundamental principles together. And it's exactly like that in dog training. If your dog has those fundamentals very strongly, very practiced, then you can go run stuff your dog almost has no business running. So one, they have to have the training and the experience on building those fundamentals. And at the same time, you have to play the psychology of the dog. If you maybe did something that the dog got in a little bit over its head, just a little bit over its head, and it was kind of in a little bit of a funk. All right, on your next session, do something that is going to relieve that. And it just depends on your dog. I can't tell anybody what to do with their dog. You, the person who knows the dog. We had a really tough day. I think today we're just going to go out and do the walk in a field. Or we're going to go do Upland today because they love that. And you address the psychological situation that your dog is in. So if you have the fundamentals in place, and not all at the same time. If you have any of those things, when you point them at water, do they get in? When you point them at the cover, do they get in? When you blow the whistle, do they stop? Whether it's on a blind or a mark, do they go where you have them pointed? Do they sit and remain seated when you say? And then do they understand your casting? Are you running to the left and then casting to the right and wondering why they went to the left? If you have those things in place and you practice these things with your dog, right, and you address your dog's emotional, psychological situation, have you been asking too much? Take a day off, go for a walk or a run, right? Are they just getting a little bit too full of themselves? Are they just, thinking they're pretty hot stuff and maybe listening isn't such a big deal? Let's go back and address which one of you is the colonel and which one's the private, on the most simple things, not on the game day stuff. All right, when their attitude toward you, if it's they're afraid, address that, not on the marks and blinds or Upland field, but on your personal relationship. Like I said, go for a run with the dog, go for a big hike, do something when you've overwhelmed them or they're a little bit afraid. And then if they're, like I said, too full of themselves, don't get after them on the game day stuff. Go address that situation. Go out and work some fundamental obedience. Go do some things that dial that dog back in where it's going, all right, I'm listening to you. I got that. So I cannot underestimate the importance of that for competitive people. Just like you're trying to qualify for the Olympics, you're good enough that you could in tennis. People, you have to have the right physical training, the right mental training. You have to have super strong fundamentals. That's more important than anything else. And you have to believe in yourself and your coach and that you can do what you're doing. And it's exactly that way with the dog, folks. So, when I watch people come to the line and their dog is doing the dread thing, it's just like, oh, man, I'm sorry that you're coming up. I hope you get it right too, as much as you do, because I hate that. Or when they're coming up, they're out of control, they're 20 feet over here and there. It's like, ooh, I see we have a little balance of power issue here. And that's always unfortunate for that handler, because the dog's probably going to be making a whole lot of choices, and some of them we aren't going to like. So I'm offering that. It's... You can do all the drills you want and get all the how-tos and all the cool stuff that all the pros give you. But this piece of it, if you're going to compete, the more you can master this piece of it and understand it, all the elements, aspects to your dog, and keep them in the right place, probably give you a little bit more success. At least I hope so. So we went from snowstorm, bitter cold, and now everyone's out in shorts. So spring in Colorado. I wish everybody the absolute most luck in your HRC and your AKC and your NAVDA and your NAGDA and your Bird Dog Challenge and the APLA stuff. And I hope I'm helpful a little bit, and I will be back next week.